thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
They're going to have to do something from the outside now. It's Page off balance. Puts it up. How did he do that? Ties the game with 4.7 seconds to go. How about that kid? They beat him up for the season with his inability to make threes. He kept his composure. This time, the little guy with some major onions to tie this thing up. Incredible. Got away from Ochefu, then had to adjust with Archie Diacono coming after him. How special is this kid? Great student, great kid to talk to. Leadership qualities above the norm. And lifted his team with a chance now with four to go. Villanova's got to get a quick push to get him up the floor. I would say, look at the kid there.
And they go length of the court with Archie Diacono. 3 seconds at midcourt.
Jenkins.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
No, no. The national champions with Jenkins hitting the winner.
And yes, what a national championship that was. Nova going into Houston, playing North Carolina, the team that was, to me, the most talented team of the two, went against David and slide. Went against Goliath and David killing up on Goliath like nothing but the truth. Ain't that something? 77, Villanova. North Carolina, 74. It was a great game. And you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wally, my homeboy,
Will T.
What's good, Willie?
Not much, man. How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good. That game was something else, man. Seeing Villanova, I call it an upset to me, upsetting Carolina.
I call it an upset. I surely didn't pick Villanova to make it that far. And even I didn't think that they would win a championship game. But they did, and kudos to them. Chris Jennings made a hell of a shot. It's probably, in terms of the NCAA championship game, probably the most exciting 10 seconds, like 7.5 seconds we saw in a championship game, you know, to end it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that probably within the next 5 minutes. We'll go in detail with the national championship game. But, yeah, you will mention Chris Jennings. That's a DMV boy. Went
yes.
to Gonzaga.
Yes.
So Chris Jenkins, big up to him. Actually, I balled with his uncle, very talented individual. So older guy, real talented, and can shoot the lights out. But like anything in life, you know, before you go out and party and whatnot, what do you usually have to do before you party? What do you do?
Pregame.
Exactly. So we're going on tradition of pregame. Like I mentioned, we're going to talk about Nova beating Carolina 77-74 in the national championship game. Vernon Davis returning to D.C., signing with the Washington Redskins. And also we're going to talk about other hometown players returning to their hometown team. We're going to talk about opening day on the Beltway with the Orioles and Nationals. And also we're going to mention probably at the about 10 minutes before the show ends, we're going to talk about boxing in the DC Armory, Adrian Broner calling out Floyd Money Mayweather. That was weird.
It was.
We're going to, anyway, before we get into that, we're going to talk about the national championship game. Your thoughts of the game?
Exciting game. Probably a game for the ages. One of the best games, championship games we've seen in a long time, to cap off probably one of the most improbable runs we saw running up to the championship game. Villanova, absolutely, you know, coming off of their game Saturday against Oklahoma, that game was a blow. Well, not even that game, but I think both of the games Saturday were kind of left a lot for the fans to be wanted by the fans. You know, that neither game was relatively close, speaking. Of course, Oklahoma lost to Villanova by 40 plus points. And then you also had UNC versus Syracuse, which was close at times, but clearly everyone knew that UNC was the better team and they continued to pull away down the stretch. But the championship game was one of the better games that I've seen in a lifetime. that I've seen in a long time outside of the this may hurt you a little bit, North Carolina Duke championship game.
What hurt me?
I mean, you're a Michigan guy.
You said North Carolina Duke.
Oh, excuse me, North Carolina Michigan.
Oh, okay. You scared about to say that ain't gonna hurt me yet. Yeah. I'm a Georgetown fan, but that did hurt me because I like the Fab Five. Yeah, that did hurt me.
That I can think of in a long time. You know, of course you had Butler versus Duke. That was a great game, and then you also had UConn versus Duke. That was a great game also back in 99, the team with Richard Hamilton.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great game also. But this one, just the last 6 seconds, seven seconds of that game was just some of the best TV we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had a problem with the game, with the officiating in the first half. I have no favorites between Carolina or Villanova. So to me, like, I felt like the referees a little bit too ticky-tack, and it was more on Carolina. Like, they would Nova every time Nova would go to the basket, it would be called a foul, and it wasn't really anything serious. It was just too ticky-tack for me. You had some guys, you know, that couldn't stay in the length of the game. They had to obviously be subbed quick because of they were in foul trouble pretty early in the first half. I want to say, looking at the stats right now, like, one comes to mind, Hicks with the foul trouble pretty quickly for North Carolina, the four for Carolina. Then you had it just seemed like within that stretch, I believe, and I don't want to be mistaken, but it was like five to six straight fouls on Carolina in one sequence. It seemed like it was to me that the game just wasn't officiated correctly. If I was a Carolina fan, I'd be annoyed. I'd be honest with you. If I was a Carolina fan, if I was a Carolina fan.
Well, I mean, not even that. Okay, officiating played a big role. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say a big role, but it played a role in it.
Yeah.
But I think the inefficiency of North Carolina's guards to throw the ball into the post when Bryce Johnson was being guarded by Diakono.
Yeah.
And also when
Archie Diakono.
Mm-hmm. And then also, who's the other kid from North Carolina that I'm thinking about?
Meeks.
When hit their inability just to get the ball into the post when there was definite size disadvantages that played into North Carolina's favor was a huge problem to me. Why they never went high low?
Exactly.
Kind of baffled me. They always tried to initiate the pass to the post from the top of the key or from the wing.
When they're fronting you.
Yeah, when you can just simply pop. Somebody the four to five or you can even bring it, run a pick, curl your three man, get him to the free throw line, and then he has the option of getting it to either guy in the post. But that's one of the things that I think when, you know, of course there's a disappointment now because it's fresh. It's less than 24 hours ago. But when North Carolina fans look back and see that, they're going to say, man, that was a blown opportunity.
No, I'm totally with you, and it goes to coaching. This is when it goes to Roy Williams. If I look at Roy Williams, is that
don't tell me about the bash Roy Williams.
I'm not gonna bash him. I'm not a Roy Williams basher. That's not my thing. I think he just, you know, he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great coach because this games like this show you who's who when it comes to the coaching pecking order, right? Look at Jay Wright. I feel like Jay Wright's an excellent coach, and I'm happy that he's won the championship because it validates where he's at in the coaching in terms of pecking order and coaching. I think he's one of the best coaches in basketball. He doesn't get he doesn't always get McDonald's All-Americans. He gets his kind of kids and his kids ball. Look at this team right here was undersized playing against Carolina. You had guards checking centers or power forwards. Bryce Johnson was guarded by Ryan Diakono at a lot in that game. And like you're talking about and
also Phil Booth.
And Phil Booth. Too, who had a game of his life. But Phil Booth as well. And all they did was front him. That was obviously strategy. That was obviously a game plan for Villanova. And Jay Wright came up with that plan. So when I look at coaching is a big part to do it. You couldn't adjust like you said, what you're talking about, play some high low action. You couldn't adjust and put one of the bigs, the free throw line or whatever angle to lob it over the top. I mean, the only adjustments they made was, and which to me is a risky pass anyway, because you got to be accurate as a lob, as a dude throwing an oop. They were throwing oops. Like from the 3-point line to over the top to Bryce Johnson for dunks.
Yeah, not only that, when they were fronting him, they also had a guy on the backside.
Yeah,
just in case he did get the ball and was able to come down, he was able to be able to either tie the ball up or go for a strip. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, in retrospect, I think when people sit back and they really watch and analyze the game again and get an opportunity to, they'll see some of the bright coaching moves that Jay Wright made and was able to help push this team over the top and get himself his first national championship.
Do you think this is a good showing for Bryce Johnson, a guy that, you know, some people think he could be a decent NBA basketball player?
Well, sorry about that. I think, right, because in big games, you want to see your big-time players step up. One of the biggest knocks against a guy who presumably will be either the one or number two pick in this NBA draft coming up, Ben Simmons, is big-time games. You know, he didn't put his team on his back and lead them or push them, impose his will for them to get a victory, to get a W. Bryce Johnson played a good game, but he left a little bit more to be – you wanted to see another side of him. You wanted him to say, all right, this is his last game. Let's put this team on my back and let's get a national championship. He didn't do that exactly, because of some of what we talked about, the inability of North Carolina to adjust and change on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of it had to do with Villanova's defense.
So I'm with you. Big players have to step up in big games. Like, this is a championship game, but at the same time, when I look at Bryce Johnson, he's a big, so he's predicated on guard play. The guards have to give him the ball, and whatever Roy Williams, or it could have been some of the guards, like a Page. Who I want to get on Page. I think Page was so clutch. It wasn't even funny. You heard down the stretch when he missed that layup, he willed himself to get the rebound, put the put back up to cut the lead to one. Then they scored. They got that cheap foul call, made the two free throw shots. Then he comes back and hits that big three. And that shows what a big time player is supposed to do in that situation. But when you look at Bryce Johnson, you wouldn't know he went 14 points, 8 rebounds. You wouldn't know. You would think that, you know, he probably scored about, say what, 5-8 points, because
it wasn't right. That's what I was about to lead you to. You're saying it wasn't an impactful 14 points.
Nah, because it's 14. When I saw a stat line, I was surprised he had 14. Like, I was like, he had 14 points? Doing what? Like, what did I miss? I thought I watched the whole game. I saw a couple dunks. I saw a sweet move when he got the ball in the post. But I don't blame Bryce Johnson. I blame Roy Williams. I blame Roy Williams, some of the guards, because they didn't feed him the ball. I blame, like, Barry, for instance. Barry was hot in the first half, right? But you could tell he was looking for his shot more and more in that game. So when I looked at him, it was like, all right, dude, like, you're not trying to feed the post. You're just trying to get your shot off. And I'm going to give a big shout out to the NCAA Hoops fan page on Hoops fan Facebook group. You know, I get a lot of content from them. Well, I mean, content. They ask me questions and
we get. Oh, okay, that's what's up.
You know, so I'm going to give big ups to them. But yeah, so when you look at that game, I look at it like, for Bryce Johnson, it's hard for me to blame him, because I'm with you, because he's a star, so you want to call him out, because you're supposed to show out. You know what I mean? Nova Star showed out. You know what I mean? When you look at Carolina, it's hard for me to call him out because he's a guard. He's a power forward, and guards have to give him the ball. So it's like, should I blame the kid? But you want to be that alpha dog in basketball.
Yeah. So you, like you said, you have to be truly objective when assessing his role and his performance in the game.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big man who's kind of predicated off of he's at the will of the guards. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, also coaching their ability to get the ball into the post. He doesn't touch the ball often.
And did you know Nova had that many DMV kids?
I sure didn't.
Like, the whole five. Like, I didn't know. Like, you have Chris Jenkins, Hart, like Silver Spring. You had the Oshefu, who's from Baltimore. Like, you had nothing but Baltimore and like DMV kids all down their squad. I believe Boofin, like from DMV as well. Like,
I didn't.
All of them. That's not a Philadelphia team at all, man. That's a They should be a Georgetown Hoyas type team or a Maryland Terp. They represented the DMV nicely, and they're most of them were all in the starting five. That's insane, just insane. But where would you rank? Not rank. So what does this championship do? What does it do for Jay Wright's image as a premier head coach?
Well, I think, right, you know, Jay Wright was one of those guys who people said good coach, but hadn't won the big one yet. Mm-hmm. So clearly he gets out of that space, you know, the space that Roy Williams was in, the space that Bill Self was in, the space that what's his name in Syracuse?
Boeheim.
Jim Boeheim, that he was once in before he won that championship with Melo. So this clearly puts him out of that, and this gets him into that the conversation about, you know, one of the more accomplished coaches in NCAA, in the NCAA right now. Because you already said, we all know that he's one of the better coaches, but this puts him in the conversation for one of the more accomplished coaches.
So, all right, so back to the game. You talking about how this probably was the best like 10 seconds ever in a championship game, national championship game. Would you go as far to say was this the best national championship game ever?
See, I'm cautious against doing the hot take that everyone does, right?
Of the moment, like living in the
talking moment. Living in the moment, yeah. Saying this is the best championship game that I've seen ever. No, I can't go that far. Is it one of the better ones that I've seen over the past 5 years? Absolutely. Uh-huh. 10? Definitely. One of the better ones I've seen over the last 5 to 10 years? Absolutely. Is it the best ever? No. I have to, you know, go back and think and, you know, but, you know, is it one of the best ones that I've seen in the last 5 to 10 years? Yes, absolutely. But I won't say best ever.
You listen to the Urban Sports Scene, my boy Will and myself, Wally. I don't know. I want to say, like, that Butler Duke game was just as good to me. Obviously, when you look at this game, you got two buzzer beaters, right? Shots. When you look at Butler, it was the David versus Goliath type of matchup. True. I know I mentioned that with Carolina and Villanova, but in the grand scheme of things, those are two big programs, regardless of the fact. Butler is a mid-major school. Was a mid-major school at the time. Right now, they're in the Big East, but they were a mid-major school. Then you have Duke. It doesn't get any bigger in today's basketball than Duke basketball, right? And to compete with that team and nearly beat that team, the storyline and then the game itself was a sexy game.
Yeah,
so that's what made it.
It was made for TV.
Exactly. Butler had won. It could have probably been the best game of all time because obviously people like the upset. But the game in terms of having Butler compete with Duke and it come to a last second shot and a half court shot that almost went in, that game rivals this game. But this game, if in my recent memory, this game is probably one of the more exciting games I've seen in a long time. That I will say. It's one of the more exciting games. But I'm like you, Will T. I can't say that it's the best game. I mean, that it's the best of all time. I think a lot of people live in the moment. They're like, okay, well, because you got that type of experience, two back-to-back, like, clutch shots, people want to look at it like, oh, it's the best game of all time. Nah, pump your brakes. We're not there yet. But anyway, it's about time for a break. When we get back from break, we're going to talk about Vernon Davis signing with the home team, the Washington Redskins. And we're going to also talk about some certain players who came back to their hometown team to ball out or not. It's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Try and make it next month. I'm sitting up there. Fucking shredded
shit up. Yellow
beat.
Holla
at me.
And Chewy on some hot. Like I told Tish, I see when I like you seen him twirl, then he drops it. And we keep them to my block. And Monte keep it on him, he done drop. And we be wildin', he some hot. Tones known to get busy with them. Try to run down and you could catch Running through these checks till I pass out. Pass out. Make sure they give me neck till I pass out. Pass out. I swear to God, all I do is cash out. And if you ain't up, get up on my trap house. I've been selling since like the fifth grade. Really never made no difference with this made. That told me flip them packs and how to maintain. Get that money back and spend it on the same thing. Shorty like the way that I ball out, ball out. I be getting money till I fall out, fall out. You talking cash, dog, I goes all out. Shorty love the way that I flow out. Free greasy them, let all of my dogs out. Mama send no cats inside my dog. That's what got my daddy locked up in the dog pound. Free fan on them, let all of my dogs out. We gon' pull up in that like we cops on them. With them 16s, we gon' put some s on them. I send a little dot. Send a drop on her. She gon' call me up and I'ma sick the highs on her. Grammy Savage, that's who we are. Grammy sh** dressed in G-Star. GS9, I go so hard. But GS from a squad. And bitch, if there's a problem, we gon' gun ball. Popping up the A. I'm with Trigger, I'm with Rasha, I'm with A-Raw. Broad daylight and we gon' let them things blow. Tell them niggas free me, she Subway, free breezy. And tell my niggas murder team. Call that body. About a week ago, with us and then we tweaking. Run up on that nigga, get to squeezing. Everybody catch him. Got me on my bully, yo. I'ma run up with that on him. I'ma run up, go dumb on him.
Yeah, this is my banger, man. Bobby Schmurder. Bobby, you don't like Bobby Schmurder?
No, I don't. Can't say I'm a fan.
Bobby Schmurder gets it, man. Bobby, we're gonna go.
Okay.
You listen to the Urban Sports Team with myself, Wally, my boy Will T, man. Call in. The phone number is 240-478-3140. That's 240-478-3140. We are also on Twitter. Just tweet us at Urban Sports Scene, no S after the after sports. And you can listen to us on the Sports Crit Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Still a Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Still a Fan. All right, let's go to Vernon Davis. Like I mentioned before the break, Vernon Davis signed a one-year deal with the Washington Redskins. He's returning back to the DMV. He played his college ball in Maryland. He is from D.C. What kind of impact can Vernon Davis have for the Washington Redskins?
If any. So that's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah, at least.
Because we know what Vernon Davis used to be. Uh-huh. You know, he used to be one of the fastest tight ends in the NFL, a physical freak. A physical specimen who could beat linebackers down the seam and could beat linebackers underneath and intermediate routes and create matchup problems for defenses. But what he's shown us to be last year in Denver and in San Francisco is a guy who drops a lot of balls and who doesn't have the burst and the separation that he once had that made him, you know, the number six overall pick in the draft when he came out of University of Maryland. Uh-huh. If he can resemble what he did, two years ago, uh-huh, then you're getting a bargain. Because you already have Jordan Reed, who's a matchup nightmare, one of the better pass catching tight ends in the NFL. You add him with a guy like Niles Paul, who's coming off of the broken ankle injury, and then you have Vernon Davis as a possible number two or number three option at the tight end position. That's a pretty impressive tight end group you have there.
And yeah, and you're referring to in 2013, Vernon Davis had 850 yards with the San Francisco 49ers. That was his last productive season. I'm with you. We don't know what he can do, but what I will say about Vernon Davis is that Vernon Davis, because he's playing with Jordan Reed, and you got to try to envision. I know it's going to sound ridiculous, but the New England Patriots, when they did have that two tight end set with a Gronkowski and the guy who's locked up. And Aaron Hernandez, I can say his name right now. It's not hurting my feelings. And Aaron Hernandez. So I feel like they're trying to recreate that in D.C., giving Kirk Cousins more weapons. You got Vernon Davis. Now he's not going against, like, the star-studded maybe linebacker who could defend better at that position, or maybe a safety who's going to be able to, you know, to deter his speed because Jordan Reed's going to be dealing with that. Now Vernon Davis is playing, probably going against a lesser DB, a lesser outside linebacker, a lesser safety. So now he's an opportunity to create some real mismatches.
And also, in my opinion, this isn't fact, I think Vernon Davis is a little bit better of a blocker, inline blocker, than Jason Reed is at this point in their career.
Jordan Reed, yeah.
Jason Reed. That's the
that's the somebody guy. Else.
Yeah, somebody else. But yeah, at Jordan Reed at this point in his career. So he does upgrade. He is an upgrade slightly over what you had last year on the active roster and the tight end position from a blocking standpoint, inline blocking.
Well, I think that, you know, playing with the 49ers at that time, they were a good run team with Frank Gore. And you saw Vernon Davis out there as a blocking tight end. So he didn't shy from it. I'm with you. He's a better run blocker than Jordan Reed. So therefore, you can have that receiving tight end / blocking tight end, and he's now a threat rather than having like a Niles Paul, who probably will be converted to fullback from what I hear, a Logan Paulson who's only a pass blocking, I'm sorry, a run blocking, pass blocking type of tight end,
and a guy who's just there for in the goal line packages.
Yeah, but now you have with Vernon Davis, there's the threat of Vernon Davis still going to vertical. You're right, Vernon Davis may have lost a step, but he's still faster than most tight ends. You know what I mean? So you still have that threat.
Absolutely.
So when I look at Vernon Davis, I think if used correctly, if Jake Rue can use him correctly, and if they can come up decipher with the appropriate scheme, it can really provide problems for the opposing defense.
Yeah, he can be a matchup problem if he still has the will to be in the best physical condition and also to improve over his catching, his hands from last year when in San Francisco and in Denver.
Yeah. Like Denver, I don't know. See, the Denver Vernon Davis, I don't even look at that Vernon Davis as him. I feel like he was coming out of a bad situation with the 49ers. Obviously, that Jim Harbaugh left. Jim Harbaugh left. The coaching staff wasn't filling their players. You had problems with cap. So to me, like, that situation was toxic. Now, going to the Denver Broncos, there was a lot of pressure for him to produce. This team needed him. And plus, they've already had their guys for so long in the season. For him to fit in, I just didn't see how it was going to truly work out anyway. You just hope it'd work out. But truth be told, you had Owen Daniels. I think it was Owen Daniels, right?
Right.
Owen Daniels playing decent football for him. So it's like, and he's already cool with Kubiak, and he's already got a rapport with Peyton Manning and company. So I didn't look at it. I didn't look at it for Vernon Davis to be successful in that situation. And especially come, like you said, he's not the same Vernon Davis. So you don't expect him to be the same guy that was in 2013 or the same guy in 2010 who had like over almost 1,000 yards, had 914 yards. So when I looked at Vernon Davis, I looked at him as a guy that he can be a good complimentary piece. And that's how I look at him now.
Well, now he's in the offense that I think is probably better suited towards his talent, even though he's towards the twilight of his career. You know, he's a five, six year veteran. Mm-hmm. A 9 year veteran. Yeah. Excuse me. So he's towards the twilight of his career, but it'll be interesting to see if he has anything left in the gas tank.
Yeah, we'll see. But Vernon Davis, like we mentioned, he's come back home, come back to DC. But there are other players out there in other sports, not just football. But what other players have come back to their home, or come back or played for their hometown team?
I think the one that's on everyone's mind right now is LeBron James. You know, as he continues his quest to bring a championship to the land, as they have it on the commercial.
I hate that term too. Right.
Another guy who won an MVP in basketball is Derrick Rose, you know, who was a Chicago kid, went to Memphis, came back to Chicago, won an MVP. But, you know, the injuries are starting to make him look like, he may not be the old Derrick Rose.
Yeah. I'm going to go baseball. Two of them. You had Ken Griffey Jr. going to the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
That's a team that, you know, he grew up watching because his dad played for the Reds at the time. You got Cal Ripken Jr.
Mm-hmm.
is an Aberdeen Baltimore kid and played for the Orioles all of his life.
And I'm going to go with a third one, even though he's a Yankee now. But when he first started, he was a Baltimore kid. Mark Teixeira, Tex.
Yeah.
He's from the Baltimore era. Severn Park.
Yeah, but he never played for his hometown team.
Who?
Teixeira.
Yeah, he did.
He never played for the Orioles.
He didn't?
No, Texas Rangers.
Oh, Texas. Oh, that's right.
He spurned the Orioles.
Yeah, he spurned. Yeah, he spurned the Orioles. Yeah,
he spurned the Orioles.
My bad.
But he did. He carried that. That hurt the whole. That's why he gets booed all the time in Baltimore.
Yeah.
He gets booed because he went to the Yankees instead of going to the Orioles.
I mean, who doesn't want to play for America's greatest team?
Come on, bro.
America's greatest team. 27 championships.
Come on, bro.
27 championships. Come on, what bro. Other team in North America sports has more championships?
I'm not going to even decide to get that with an answer. What about Juan Dixon? Juan Dixon won a national championship for Maryland, from Baltimore, played for the Washington Wizards.
That's another good one.
Yeah. I'm not going to say he's a star, but Juan Dixon did some good things in the area, did some good things. I believe he's coaching. Oh, he's part of the University of Maryland staff, one way or the other.
Yeah, I believe so.
One way
yeah.
or the other. Trying to think of another individual that we can think of. You know, football's more. Other Vernon Davis stands out. Football's a little more complicated. I'm trying to think of that one player.
One star player.
Star player. I think it's easy to find a role player, but a star. I mean, I could, like, for instance, for the Washington Redskins, we can say like a Byron Westbrook. Play for the Washington Redskins.
Okay.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's another.
Yeah, no, you're trying to find those star players.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's not that many star players that I can see that they came back and played home. I'm sure I'm missing one, but I can't think of one at the moment. Like
I can't think of one either.
That a star player, the prodigal son has returned type thing.
Nah, I mean, people in D.C. are hoping Kevin Durant comes back this year to play for
exactly.
the Wizards.
Exactly. So that was going
to
be – that's the one that everybody wants. They want KD. They want it to be
– I don't see that happening, though.
Kevin Durant coming home?
No. Just the way it is. You know, if you – well, I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get on my soapbox right now.
You ready to talk about Ernie Grunfeld and company? It was going down, wasn't it? It's going to be Ernie, right? It's going to be the Ernie Grunfeld show, wasn't it?
Both of them have to go at this point.
Who are you telling? They're terrible. You know what I mean? They're just the absolute.
Even though I will say that the one saving grace for Randy Whitman is you can clearly tell he doesn't want to play that space and pace type of basketball. But it's just that I think they need a new voice. You know, him coming out and criticizing the team and in the media. It's kind of pushing guys away from they aren't giving the 100% effort that they would give that they gave last year that made this one of the top teams in the East.
I'm thinking I actually thought of a player, but he doesn't count because he's not. I don't think he's from the DMV, but his mom lives in Clinton. Markeith Morris.
Okay.
So does that count? I don't think that counts though. I can't call it. But all I know, a DMV kid won a national championship.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. And DMV kids won a national championship.
And that's what note we're going out on the commercial break.
You know it. When we come back from break, we're going what? Up and down 295.
Yep.
We're talking about the Orioles, the Nationals.
Opening day, baby.
Both winning. One's a walk-off and one was an extra innings. It's the Urban Sports Saints.
For ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
Strast in Russian means passion. I play all out every game. I give it everything I have. I broke my nose, got stitches, and scored 4 goals. I do it for you. I do it for Russia. That is Strast.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Team, my boy Will T and myself, Wally. Make sure you call in. The number is 240-478-3140. Also, our Facebook page is the Urban Sports Team, so search it out. And then, actually, I read it all differently. Just search it out, please. Search it out. Search it. Search it, please. And Ray Jeezy, man, we miss you up here, man. You better be listening. Call in if you can. Hope everything's good, my man. We'll see you back here next week. We're going to have a three-man weave. We're going to have a three-man weave right next week, right?
Yeah, I should be.
All right. We got a three-man weave back in the business. And I love this song, man. Backyard Adele version. You don't like the song? You like it? The Backyard version of Adele's. Hello? You don't like it?
Even though I'm a native of the area,
I'm not a big go-go fan music
fan, man. There are moments that where I'm like, oh, you know, this is amazing. But, you know, to sit and listen to it on my iPod, no.
This is my workout song.
Well, that's good for you.
You know why? Because like, it's like 7:40 minutes. Like 7:40, right? Mm-hmm. So 7 minutes and 40 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm running a trim for like 25 minutes. It's about three songs, I'm out of here.
I mean, that's a great way to look at it.
Three songs, I'm out of there. Anyway, again, you listen to Urban Sports Scene. The Nationals beat the Braves in 10 innings, 4-3. Your thought, your impressions of Washington Nationals? It's opening day, so we got to have impressions.
I think it showed the good and the bad of this team. The good, the hitting. You know, you had a first, you had a opening
home run
by Bryce Harper. Mm-hmm. Then you had a home run by Daniel Murphy, the newly signed second baseman. And then you also had guys who were getting contact within the lineup. The bad, the bullpen. The bullpen, another collapse. The biggest issue or question coming into the season was the bullpen. Matt Scherzer pitched pretty strongly during the seven innings. He pitched seven innings.
Mm-hmm.
But towards the end, you know, the bullpen's what gave it up. You know, the walks, the ball, you know, the balls, the walks, the hits, you know, so it showed the good and the bad. It showed you that this team does have an ace who's one of the better starting pitchers in baseball, and it also showed that this team can hit all throughout the lineup. But the Achilles heel of this team has and will be the bullpen.
Those are good points. This team, what I like about this team, what I took away from this team, and it shows this is going to be a strong team. It's going to be a strong team this whole season. Is that we got to see what Dusty Baker is all about. In this game, the Nationals, they did, like Will T said, the bullpen did struggle a little bit, but Dusty Baker wasn't scared to take risks. The Nationals lost the lead. The game was tied. The Braves went up. They were up in the ninth against Grilly in the top of the ninth. They got two men on board. Then Danny Espinosa comes to the plate. I was watching the game. I was just remembering this whole the sequence. He tried to lay a sacrifice bunt. He failed twice. So the count was 1-2. Everybody, if you're a baseball fan, you know this. If you try to do a sacrifice and it goes foul, it's a strike three and you're out. Dusty Baker took the chance. They got the sign, took the chance. And Danny Espinosa squared up, delivered a great bunt. Actually, it was a bunt single, got on base. So the bases were loaded. Stephen Drew struck out. So it was the bases loaded with one out. Nats were down one. Then, you know, Michael Taylor came to the plate. They hit a shallow fly, and Jason Wirth was at third base. He's not the fastest guy in the world. A shallow fly. The outfielder had a good arm. He actually threw it on the money. I'm going to go back. Wirth tags up, comes home. Alfred has a great arm. Throws it to home plate.
He drops it.
Yeah, catcher drops it. Jason Wirth scored. Now, what I'm saying by that is that most managers wouldn't take that risk. Most managers, once their batter goes 1-2 on a bunt situation, would let the batter swing. Dusty Baker was like, screw that. I'm about taking that risk. That's the kind of manager the Nats have.
Well,
that's different from Matt Williams.
I think it also goes to state that Dusty Baker isn't a big analytics guy.
Exactly.
Because most managers would have done what the analytics told them, which was what was to do, which was to swing and put the ball in play.
Uh-huh.
Dusty Baker went with a feel. He went with a gut. And I know, you know, baseball is a game that's big off of statistics and analytics, but you need a guy. Statistics and analytics are, they should be something that helps or helps enhance the manager's feel. I mean, a manager's decision making. They shouldn't be making the decision for the manager. Mm-hmm. Dusty Baker's a manager. He's been around baseball a long time. He had a feeling. He went with his gut, and that's what happened. And that's why this team was successful on opening day yesterday.
And I agree with you. That's why it's one of the main reasons why it's successful. But then you mentioned some of the people who stood out. Bryce Harper. It's just the guy is continuing his ascendance to the best player in baseball. A lot of people still think Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. But
enjoy him while you can.
Enjoy it now. Fans. Oh yeah, no, right. He's gonna be somewhere else.
I think so.
He'll be a Yankee. That's what he's gonna be. Seriously. I totally believe that. But right now in the present, you know. He's ascending to be to becoming the best baseball player in baseball, not in the National League, but in baseball. The guy, I believe, was like 1-for-3. He hit a home run. He stole a base. He's that guy right now. And if he can play at the same rate he played last season, and this Nats team is healthy, in addition to Daniel Murphy, who had a home run too as well, yesterday against the Braves, this team is dangerous. You saw what Daniel Murphy did against the Braves, and see how clutch he was. He continued what he did with the Mets and did it with the Nats, having that key double to score Ryan Zimmerman.
Let's make sure we preface it correctly. He continues to do what he did in the playoffs with the Mets. He didn't always do that during the regular season.
Oh yes, that's it. In the playoffs. Okay. But you know what? At the same time, he is showing us a pattern now. He's showing us a trendy pattern that for whatever reason, when it clicked. It started to click for him. And
I'm always wary of paying a guy or thinking a guy is going to be a savior who just because he had a great playoff season. Mm-hmm. I'm wary of that. But hopefully Daniel Murphy is. Like I said, I'm a Nats supporter. And, you know, this is a good start for the season. They actually are. The Nets and the Braves are playing right now.
No, they play tomorrow.
Playing tomorrow. So, you know, we'll see how game two of 162-game season goes.
Hey, it's all predicated with Steven Strasburg does tomorrow. I think Steven Strasburg is essential to what this Nats team wants to do this season. If he comes out looking like that guy we saw not too long ago who people were pissed off that he got shut down during that season, then we know – Then the Nationals should be very happy about what the kind of pitcher they're going to have in terms of that 1-2 punch, that staff, that 1-2 punch.
That's true. If he, you know, this is his, he'll be a free agent during the offseason. So, you know, he has the incentive to take his play to another level. But if he can be the Steven Strasburg that everyone thinks and wants him to be, this is a very dangerous team. Watch out.
Yeah, totally agree. So back to how dangerous this team is. Do you have this team winning the NL East?
NL East, yes. I don't think the Mets have it, even though people say the Mets have the best rotation in baseball because, you know, they're paying like $7.4 million for all five of their starters. They're young starters, and they have them through 2018. But, you know, I think what people are failing to forget about that Mets run last year is they got really hot, particularly Cespedes. Cespedes got really hot. And then you also had the pitching, very strong and very consistent. Those two things, we don't necessarily know if they're going to happen. What we do know is this Nats team, all throughout the lineup, has hitters. This Nats team does have a relatively a strong but not as strong rotation as the Mets. You know, they have some young arms they can call up. And the Nats still do have a GM who has a propensity of going out and getting exactly what this team needs. So maybe hopefully Rizzo, if this team shows that they're trending, ascending towards that NL East title, will go out and get the help in the bullpen that's needed.
All right. Time to go up 295. See how I did that?
Appreciate that, man.
I did that. You know what I mean?
Proper grammar.
I know. I can improve, man. I'm about the people. The Baltimore Orioles. All right. They beat the Minnesota Twins yesterday, 2-3.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
I know it's only one game, but what's your impression so far of the Orioles?
Well, it's crazy. I look at, you know, the new guys they brought into the team. You have Mark Trumbo, who went 4 for 5. So when you look at that, you know, look at his production, you're like, okay, wow, okay, maybe the Orioles can do some damage. So, and to be honest with you, because there were like two rain delays, Chris Tillman couldn't pitch the whole game. But in the two innings he did pitch, he struck out 5 batters in 2 innings, which is very impressive if you think about it. So you prorate that every, I know we can just, you know, throw a number out there, but say for every other 2 innings he pitched, say he had like 3 to 5 strikeouts, he was in route for a 10 strikeout game, barring something disastrous happening. So looking at that, I'm like, wow, this Oriole team looks like they're ready to compete. I like Adam Jones. I mean, I think this is going to be a big season for him. He had a big double and near home run. That brought in two runs. I liked that Matt Weers came big in the clutch in the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth. When Chris Davis made the second base, he walked, and then there's a wild pitch, got him to second. Then Matt Weiders had a key single, the big game winning single, for the Orioles to win the game. I like the bullpen. The bullpen was great. Tyler Wilson did a great job pitching 3 big shutout innings. Given struggled a little bit. I mean, gave up 2 runs, but all in all, he did his best. He looked good in that first inning, second inning. I felt like he got a little tired. Then you had, O'Day who did a great job shutting things down. You also had my man Zach Britton, and the Oriole team looks strong. But again, Buck has always managed the bullpen correctly. That's one that he can do, and even in a rain delay situation like that, the Orioles were able to mix and match their way to a W. But I was interested in seeing how some of the younger guys, some like the new guy Rickard.
Well, let me ask you. I was going to bring him up.
Go ahead.
Joey Rickard, he started at left field, opening day for the Orioles. Do you think going forward this is the guy?
What I do like that he brings to the table. He went 2 for 4 against the Twins. So what I do like about him is that he brings some speed, which the Orioles need in their lineup. And he's not the prototypical I need to hit a home run type of guy. He's a guy who slaps the ball around the field. Now, granted, this is his first major league. He's the first time he's played on a major league team. What I mean by that is that he didn't make, you know, he's been a career minor league player, even playing in foreign leagues. He's hitting hit 283 in foreign and minor leagues combined, according to baseballreference.com. So when you look at a Joey Rickard, I think he's capable of being a left fielder. I personally like Nolan Rymo to play the position, because I'm a fan of the home run ball, and he's a guy, if you project him even within a 162 game season, he projects if he played all 162 games, a guy who can hit about 20 home runs. I believe baseballreference.com has it 22 home runs. That would be his average in 162 games. His career average is about 250, so it's not that far off. I mean, well, far enough off of a Rickard's 283. So, but that's Rymo playing against major league pitching. So again, if I had to choose for myself, I would pick Nolan Rymo over Rickards. But again, I'm not mad at it. I understand that you already have a bunch of home run hitters within this Oriole lineup. We didn't even get to see what the best of Alvarez, what Pedro Alvarez, who's going to DH a lot for the Baltimore Orioles. But this team is filled with power hitters. So I can see why having a Joey Rickards in the lineup, because he brings a different dimension.
Okay. Now I have to ask you the obligatory question after one game. Can the Orioles win the AL East?
Yeah, I think they have a good chance to win the AL East, only because – well, not only because. One, I think people have the Blue Jays they overrate the Blue Jays. Everybody likes the Blue Jays because their offense is potent and what they can do, you know, what they can do offensively. But the Orioles have a potent offense as well. The Orioles, you can arguably say the Orioles offense is maybe more potent than the Blue Jays, because when you go from top to bottom, from the leadoff hitter all the way to the eighth hitter, you have nothing but home run hitters for the Baltimore Orioles.
And especially in that park.
And in that park.
Camden Yards.
Exactly. And if you wanted to make it even that, if you wanted to make it that more explosive, if you really looked at it as a power lineup, you could have 1 to 9. If you started Nolan Rymo, that'd be 9 hitters who could project, who could potentially hit 20 home runs And you don't usually get that. That is a stud line. That's a stud lineup. So yeah, I think the Orioles can beat the Blue Jays. I think the pitching staff, depending on what you saw, Chris Tillman can pitch the way he pitched yesterday. I know it's two innings. He pitched somewhat like that. You have Dylan Bundy. He's not a starter, but you were projecting to be a starter eventually this season. You got Michael Wright, who throws about 95, 96. You have guys in this lineup. Tyler Wilson eventually, to me, should be a starter. You saw what he did in just spot-up duty because of the rain delay. You got guys, and you got Ubaldi Jimenez. So you got guys who can do some damage. I mean, in the pitching staff. So I look at the Orioles, yeah, I think they can definitely win a division.
That's coming from an Orioles fan, so take that with a grain of salt.
Look, people. Son, that is you can call me an Orioles fan. It's semi-true. I am an Orioles fan. All right, but I'm speaking the truth.
Okay.
All right. I tell the truth even when I lie.
You tell the truth even when you lie?
Even when I lie, I tell the truth. Oh.
Okay. We're going from a lie to potentially the biggest joke that we heard on April Fool's. Adrian Broner. We're going to talk Adrian Broner. Can he possibly beat Floyd Money Mayweather?
It's the Urban Sports Night.
The ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
That's a first-rate queso dip. Haven't been this lost in years.
Recalculating shortest route.
Do I really look like this?
And put it on top?
Never seen this one before.
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
I like it.
I seen your girl post a bill, so I hit her in the deal. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, that's your man, I hate to be him.
I'm Rashad Ross, I listen to Urban Sports Scene.
Alright, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene, my boy Will T and myself, Wally. And again, it's a pleasure giving you guys sports. We love doing it. This is what we do. We do it for the people. And we love the people, man. We love them. All right, call in. The number is 240-478-3140. That's 240-478-3140. We're also on Facebook, so just search the Urban Sports Scene. And also, check out my homies, our homies, Football Garbage Time Podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. We've been battling Hakeem Wong and Ryan Whitfield in our March Madness brackets. I know I lost. Did you win?
No, I didn't.
You sure you didn't win?
I'm positive I didn't win.
Look, I don't know who won. I got to check who won. You didn't win?
No, I didn't, because North Carolina didn't win. But I was the only person that had who had a chance to continue to get points, because everyone else picked Kansas. You picked Maryland. Others, another.
I mentioned my picks. Like, you picked Kansas. You picked Maryland. I feel like you're trying to put me on blast. Right?
I'm not trying to put you on blast. I think somebody else picked UVA. People pick Michigan State, so they were blown the first day. But yes, I was the one guy who actually had a shot to win this who still had a chance to win it going into last night.
Yes, you did. You almost had a chance, man. Both teams play hard, man.
Yeah.
Rasheed Wallace said both teams play hard, man.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? You did a good job, though, man. You represented this well, man. I ain't gonna lie, man. You represented the team well. I'm trying to figure out who actually won in our league, but in our bracket. I'll find out later.
Yeah, we'll give him a shout out at the end of the show
when I find it. But yeah, Adrian Broner, he came to DC Armory. The dude said DC is his second home. He went up against Theophane. Was it Ashley Theophane?
Mm-hmm.
Theophane got TKO'd in the ninth round.
In the ninth round, yes.
Wow. I guess, and I believe Theophane is in on Mayweather's label. I mean, their label. I call it a label.
Yes, he's promoted. He's on the Mayweather promotions. He's under Mayweather's promotion. Yes.
Mayweather promotion.
So we all know Adrian Broner, one of the bigger personalities in boxing. Yeah, 140-pound. He was the 140-pound champion. He was stripped of the title, not because he lost, but because he wasn't disciplined enough to lose 0.4 pounds and lost the title on the scale. You take Adrian Broner's, some will say, you know, he's still growing. That's why he had the problems losing weight. Mm-hmm. I respect that. I understand that. But if you take, you can't just assess him looking in a vacuum like that, right? Then you have the multiple arrest warrants for him back in Ohio. You also have some of the things he was doing in social media when he was in someone showed me he was in a Walmart, I think in D.C.
Oh, you ain't see that?
Yeah. And he said, I'm AB. I don't need no change, bro. Then threw his change up in the air. You couple those two things with his inability to meet the weight, the contractual weight, the contractual weight limit. And you start to wonder, does this guy really take the opportunity, the blessing that he has to be one of the better boxers? Seriously, you know, he's seeing, you see a lot of things in his behavior that makes you question his dedication to the sport. You know, we know that when he's at his best physically, that he's one of the more entertaining fighters in the ring. Some would say he emulates Floyd Mayweather a little bit too much in the ring with his style of fighting, but it's effective. You know, it's a style of fighting that to this point has been successful for him, except for when he's stepped up the level of competition against the guys like Sean Porter and Marcos Maidana. Once he's taken his game to kind of that upper, that next level, that those guys who are like A-minus, A fighters, Adrian Broner has had problems. Some will say, and I don't think it's because of lack of skill. I think it's because of lack of dedication and lack of focus. Adrian Broner, he's at a pivotal point in his career now. He has to decide, what does he want to do? Does he want to be a boxing superstar who's known because of what he's done in the ring, or does he want to just be one of these guys who fly by the waistband, a social media star who everyone talks about everything he does except for boxing? So he, you know, if he can hear our voice, which I doubt, I would, you know, or anyone who's around him, I would say he needs to focus on what he could do best. And that's be using his physical talent to be one of the better box, one of the best or better boxers in the world, in the sport of boxing.
Was this fight big for him, though? Like, did this showing do anything for his rep?
No, it didn't. I mean, first of all, it's a Friday night fight. Right? No, I'm just being honest with you. Right, we all know that the major fights, the big fights in boxing are on Saturday night, you know. Mostly, even though I like what PBC is doing, is bringing boxing to, you know, to regular TV and not putting it on to traditional, like HBO or Showtime or going to pay-per-view. But, you know, it was a Friday night fight, essentially. So, you know, just putting that, just looking at that in itself, a guy with Adrian Broner's talent shouldn't be fighting on Friday night. He should be fighting Saturday night, main event, huge fights. Now, granted, I'm glad that he came to D.C. to fight, but, you know, in Vegas or, you know, that's historically where the major fights have been. But, you know, I like what they're doing and they're bringing fights to D.C., which is great to me, which I think is major. So this fight didn't do a lot for his for Adrian Broner to continue, for people to say, wow, AB is the next. He's it. He's the next star in boxing. No, it did nothing for him. Absolutely. And then him losing his title on the scale did even less for him.
Yeah. I mean, to me, to get an impressive win, a TKO in the ninth round, I feel like it's done. It may help him out a little bit. But also, when I look at Adrian Broner, I saw that he got a TKO without even knocking a dude out, knocking a dude down, which I thought was kind of suspect. You know, and the dude, if you've seen
Ashley Theo Payne,
you've seen his response. He was like, why are you stopping the fight? You know what I mean? He was getting beat up. He's getting beat up, though. Don't get it twisted. He was getting beat up. But I'm just saying that if you look at his response, he's like, why did you stop the fight? The guy never went down, but he's getting the TKO, which we've seen before.
We've seen that. We've seen boxers who looked like they were okay, but still, you know, who got a TKO.
Getting that work.
Yeah.
Basically getting that work. But yeah, I think for Adrian Broner, he needed it. So I'm just interested to see, you know, what comes from this fight. But we'll talk about that later. But if you haven't heard, man, the dude was called out Money Mayweather. And we're about to play that clip for you right now. So here what Adrian Broner had to say about Floyd Money Mayweather.
I want to thank all the people that was watching in Cincinnati, but DC my second home. But the fight, it felt good. I always could do better, but I did what I had to do to get the victory. You know, when people fight me, they come with their best, their A game. And he definitely came with his A game, but even that wasn't enough tonight. I definitely gave y'all what I promised. It wasn't in the fourth round, but I knocked his ass out, though.
I have to ask, moving forward, what is your eye on in the boxing ring?
Man, listen. As y'all know, I've been going through a lot this whole week. And for me to come in here and to bottle everything up and to come in here and stay focused and get the job done, I want to give a pat on the back to myself, because that's a lot. But y'all probably know about this. Somebody that I look up to, somebody that I admire, took the chance to do an interview and just talk all bad about me. Now I don't know how y'all look at that. I don't know how y'all look at it, but I don't like it, and I wasn't gonna do this, but I'm a man that learns from physical activity. So me and Floyd, he gotta see me. He gotta see me. Point blank, period. And I'm a man. Hold on, y'all. Now, I'm a man at the end of the day. And I come from the streets, the trenches, man. From the bottom, from nothing. I'm talking about water and cornflakes. I come from nothing. And I will never let a man disrespect me like that. So he gotta see me. I don't care if we spar or we fight. Let's get it on.
Look at my man, AB. Talking about, you gotta see me. You gotta see me.
You gotta see you for what?
My man, he's coming from watering cornflakes, dude. Like, okay. The streets. He's real. Floyd gotta see him, though. You can't talk about me and you can't see me. I don't care. We got to spar, take it to the streets.
Stop being a clown, man. Adrian Broner, stop being a clown. Come on, man. Seriously. And this is what you have to seriously ask yourself. Floyd Mayweather is box office. He's the biggest thing in boxing, even though he's retired, with air quotes, retired. If he were to fight Adrian Broner, exactly what has Adrian Broner done that would elicit this to be a fight that people will want to see outside of promote the fight verbally? Mm-hmm. What has he done in the ring? Last time I checked, when he was in the ring with upper echelon fighters.
Porter and Maidana,
he lost.
Yes.
Now he's beat guys like Paulie Malignaggi, not to take anything away from Paulie Malignaggi. But who has he beaten that would get people to be excited about a fight with him and Floyd Mayweather, outside of, we know that the verbal jousting, the verbal sparring would be entertaining in itself? Nothing. You know, if Floyd Mayweather is going to fight anyone at 147, I've long said it, it'll be Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia continues to win. He will fight Danny Garcia.
You got to see me, though.
You don't have to see Adrian Broner. Adrian Broner, you got to see Sean Porter. Go see Sean Porter.
I like that. So, okay, what's next for Adrian Broner now?
Probably a move to one back to 147. He was reluctant to lose the 0.4 pounds to make weight. So either that's him lack of training, or his body truly is growing, which I think is more his body's truly growing. Mm-hmm. And he needs to just make the step up to 147 and stay at 147 and fight there permanently.
But if he did fight, I'm going back, if he did fight Floyd, could he give Floyd some gut?
I think no, I really don't. I think because the lack of focus.
Okay.
I'm saying boxing is a mental is boxing is 75% mental.
I am not a pro Adrian Broner. I am not an Adrian Broner fan. But I will say this: if he was focused, though, do you think he can compete with Floyd? If he was focused with that ability, skill set, power, speed.
No, he can't, okay, because we saw a guy like Sean Porter who just rushed him and he couldn't. He had not. He didn't have an answer. Marcos Maidana rushed him and he didn't have an answer. That's shown an inability to adjust on the fly in the ring against top flight competition. So no, he doesn't have a shot.
You listen to the Herb Sports, my man, Will T, myself, Wally. We're about to close this show out, but Will T, before we close the show, you got any parting shots? Any parting words?
Not at all. North Carolina, you let me down. I went to bat for you. I knew that you were the best team in college basketball all year. You let me down. I'm disappointed. Even though young men, they came out and they played a spirited and a hell of a game. Nothing you should be ashamed of for your season, but once again, you let me down.
I want to give a big shout out to my man Kobe. That's who won the March Madness pool. Kobe, our Washington Wizard insider who
blogged. I mean, Kobe, you should be happy that North Carolina didn't, because I was coming for that ASS. I was going to win. If North Carolina hung on and won, I was going
to
win.
Hey, well, hopefully we can mention this next show on Tuesday. But congrats to Allen Iverson and Shaquille O'Neal and Tom Izzo for getting into the Hall of Fame. And y'all, y'all mean too as well.
We'll discuss that next week.
But but you know, again, I told you, Pro Basketball Hall of Fame
It's not the same thing, but Yao Ming, he could have went in as a contributor because he contributed to growing the game.
That's pretty
but
much
as
what
a
it
player,
is, man.
But as a player,
no, he shouldn't have.
Hell no.
No, he shouldn't have. But like I said, man,
he's a contributor.
Christian Leitner's in the Hall of Fame.
But Christian Leitner
for college.
Yeah, for college. And it's totally warranted for college.
Yeah, it is totally warranted for college. Yeah,
yes.
Totally right.
He was, say what you want about Christian Leitner, he was a hell of a college player.
Sure was. But anyway, y'all take it easy, be out. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega Leaders out, homie. Swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag.